when you're planning hunt areas, always account for elevation changes. For example, if you're hunting Colorado, I would have three elevation differences. I would have a high, kind of that mid-range. When I say mid-range, I'm talking 8,000 to 10,000. Mm-hmm. And then I would have something in that 6,000 to 8,000 range planned out. So 6 to 8, 8 to 10, and then 10 plus. Now in Montana, I wouldn't go that far because we don't have that kind of elevation here. The research is pretty darn clear, guys, that it's not moon phases, it's not any other phases, it's not temperature, it's not a lot of things that trigger the rut or the, let's just say this, guys, because with elk, we can't talk about 100%. Let's talk about the majority of cows coming into estrus and being entering the breeding cycle is dictated by the date, by this equinox date, which is always within 2 or 3 days every year. So what is the best time in that range is what I'm looking, if I'm going to hunt those periods. Here's a couple pros you want to think about. The elk are potentially less herded up, which means they're potentially more susceptible to calling. Bulls are much more mobile. They're roaming more. They're covering more ground. They're looking for cows more during this period. You might have, your odds of running into them might be a little better because of that movement nature.
And that's why moon has always been a big thing for me. If I'm dealing with here in Arizona, especially if it's hot, which normally is, but there's some units that are up higher elevation that tend to stay a little bit cooler. And sometimes we get a September that cools down or, you know, it's timed well with the rains and whatever. But if it's hot and it's got a full moon, I can almost guarantee you those elk are going to shut up by 9 o'clock every morning. What's up, Days in the Wild Nation? Before we get into this next episode, I have a couple of favors to ask of you. I know you heard me say it before, but please take a few moments and go give us a review on iTunes. It really helps me reach more people, helps my ratings, which ultimately helps me keep this podcast free and create content for you guys. If you could also go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, check out their line of shooting and hunting products. A lot of game-changing stuff on there. And if you use promo code John Stallone, you'll save 20%. John Stallone, all one word. Lastly, if you've been listening to the show, you know that Days in the Wild podcast and Days in the Wild Outfitters have partnered with Primos. We love their trail cameras, love their ground blinds. We use some of their calls, assortment of other little gadgets here and there. Go check them out. Tons of stuff on their website. If you use promo code STL02, you'll save 15%. Thanks for tuning in, and let's jump into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're back on with Mark Livesay, and we are going to continue with our e-scouting or cyber scouting series right now, and we're gonna dive into some different things today. What's going on, Mark?
I'm doing good, John. How about yourself?
like I said before we started the record button here, I'm going in a million different directions at the same time right now. Springtime for me, spring, summer, is just always terrible. Terrible. I start getting into a depression. I until about August rolls around, then I'm like, oh, I can start thinking about hunting again. It snaps me out of it, but I'm just so busy with work that it's so.
You know, I thought, you know, obviously 2020 was just terrible for everybody and for a lot of people. And I thought 2021, I was thinking, okay, no, it can't be any worse.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure it's not worse. I'm in the event business as well. And I mean, having outdoor events and all, I mean, it's just not much has changed, to be totally honest.
No.
And it's a battle all the way around. And so anyway, we'll get through it. But you know what? We cannot think about that for a while. We can talk about one of our favorite subjects.
That's exactly it. That's why.
Part three,
yep.
When we do it big, I guess. So I'm looking forward to this one because this is, you know, I'm pretty into what I really love e-scouting, or as you call it, cyber scouting. But one of the other things I really like is really analyzing not only where I'm going to hunt, breaking it down, but then really getting specific and looking very carefully at the dates mm-hmm. and the scheduling and how that works with my hunt planning. So I think that's one of the things you wanted to talk about today too. So
yeah, for sure. I did want to close up our last session with a couple questions here, and then we'll jump into that. I know we started to touch on this, but I don't think we actually end up getting into it because we ran out of time. But what are some of the factors you're considering in relationship to conditions when you're choosing your backup spots? So you got your primary spot,
right?
And it's at X elevation with, you know, Y vegetation or habitat complex and blah, blah, blah. But now something has happened. Crazy cold front comes in, bunch of snow, whatever. What are some of the things that, like, how are you setting up your backup plans? Are you setting them? I know, because you have mentioned having different elevation belts.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I'm glad you said that, because it's really ironic, and it's kind of fortunate that we're doing this podcast today. It'll come out a little later, of course, but I just posted, took me 3 months to finish this freaking module. You know, it's funny, John, real quick, is that as I'm working on this course, when you start taking the course, if you're taking it, mm-hmm. the first few modules, you'll be like, man, this guy's video capabilities are a little lacking. He might, I'm not sure that he doesn't understand a little bit about what he's talking about, but his video skills need some work. And so after 30 modules, this was number 26, I guess, but some of them have multiples. And so I'm over 30. I do feel, guys, that if you hang with me in the course, it gets better as I go. So I just finished the late season module, which this thing was 3 parts over 2 hours. And I put over six months of work into this one module. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that a ton in that. But because late season is even more
unpredictable,
important,
yeah. Yeah,
that you have a variety of hunt areas that meet certain requirements. But even during archery, I've learned my lesson. I think you have too. I've been surprised with the weather that I've gotten in September in a few places. I mean, I've had 18 inches of snow and some, all kinds of things have happened on archery hunts. But as far as planning hunt areas, there's some rules that I try to work with. Is I'm not only looking for three. Now, remember, we talked about this before. When we're talking about hunt areas, these are specific geographic locations that you could feasibly conduct your entire 7 to 10 day, 14 day hunt within. Okay, these are not like I'm going to walk over the other side of the ridge kind of thing. I mean,
right.
When I say hunt, usually a hunt area requires you to remove yourself from one place, physically transport yourself to another location. It could be the other part of the mountain range. It could be another unit. It could be across the state. A lot of it depends on your tag, what your parameters, what you're confined with your tag, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So with that said, some of the things that I'm particularly focused on is, let's just say we're going to work out five. One of those, at least one, if not two of those, needs to be at a significant elevation change. And the reason I say two is because, you know, a lot of guys, particularly like in Colorado, okay, let's use Colorado for example. I love to hunt timberline elk in Colorado. I really love it. I love getting up there high, getting away from a little bit of the pressure, because Colorado has a ton of pressure, even though guys are still getting up there. But I really like to hunt those timberline bulls in September. Well, there's a couple factors at that high. Number one, you can get snow, serious snow in September. It's possible. But even more importantly, the grasses can be completely bone dry up there by the time September rolls around.
Right.
Everyone thinks those bulls are going to be high, and they are if the conditions are right. So you can't only think about weather when you're thinking about your hunt area. You got to think about food source viability, because those cows will make an adjustment. And when those cows make an adjustment, the bulls will make an adjustment during the breeding period. Now, the bulls, during other parts of the year, will stay high, no matter if the food is – I mean, if the food's a little subpar, they prefer it. But during the rut, I found that even though they'll just go where the cows are. But the cows are not going to tolerate subpar food sources. They're going to move. And that's going to draw the bulls with them, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Now, some people fight me on that. But that's just, I've hunted Colorado the most of any state I've hunted. And I probably have the most experience in Colorado. And those high elevation bulls, they just love to be there if the conditions are right. So snow is a factor. And it's not so much that the elk are going to leave, guys, when the snow comes. It's more of the fact that you're not going to be able to get there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from an access point, meaning roads, trailheads, just hiking in deep snow, those kind of things can change. So when you're planning hunt areas, always account for elevation changes. For example, if you're hunting Colorado, I would have three elevation differences. Mm-hmm. I would have a high, kind of that mid-range. When I say mid-range, I'm talking 8,000 to 10,000. Mm-hmm. And then I would have something in that 6,000 to 8,000 range planned out. Mm-hmm. So 6 to 8, 8 to 10, and then 10 plus. Now in Montana, I wouldn't go that far because we don't have that kind of elevation here. And so I would have probably two elevations in Montana. In Wyoming, I probably would only have two there as well. Colorado's kind of unique because they've got such an extreme high country that is really has amazing habitat for elk, unlike a lot of other states. And so I would focus on that. Like in Utah and Nevada and some of these other states, I don't have a lot of experience in because I can't seem to draw tags. But what I read and what I understand is that the food sources are incredible in the spring and early summer, but man, it really dries up quick in the high country in those states.
Yep.
So going high in those states may not be the best option during the breeding season because of the relocation of the cows. Does that make sense? I hope I said that right.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's the first thing is I look at multiple elevation. I call it in the course elevation bands. I'm not saying specific elevations. I'm saying bands of elevation.
Right.
So real quick before we move on, I'm not promoting this tool. I'm just going to tell you one of the things I've really found that I'm spending more and more time with, and I covered it a lot in the late season because elevation bands are even more important if you're rifle hunting or hunting in the late season is, well, in some state, Arizona, maybe not as big a deal. New Mexico, guys, it depends
actually,
on the state,
so don't, I got a story for, I'll tell you a story right after okay. You don't say what you got to say.
Great. So again, I don't have any experience in Arizona because I can't draw a freaking tag. So anyway, one of the resources that is not very well known yet is, I don't know if you've messed around much, you probably have, but with the Go Hunt new mapping program online. Guys, I'm just going to be, you know, everybody that listens to me, if you ever listen to me on podcasts before, you know I'm going to tell you straight up what I think, okay? I pay for my own membership, nothing. Their mapping program needs work. I'm just going to tell you it needs work. It needs a few things done to it. They don't have a mobile app yet. They keep saying they're going to have it, but they don't have it. I hope it comes soon. I'm kind of excited about it. Their 3D is decent. It's not exceptional. We talked about that before. I'm not going to get into that. But one of the things I've been using lately, two of the things I've been using, I want to throw this in because this is they have the only ability to select elevation bands in there. So you can go to a hunt area, click on 7,000 to 9,000 range, and see everything shaded in that entire unit that's at that elevation band.
Oh, that's cool.
It's pretty freaking cool. Now, it's not going to show you where the elk are going to be, of course, but what it's going to show you is how that elevation works around that unit. Mm-hmm. And you could do this with topographic layers, of course, but it's hard. You know, right. It's hard to see that, especially, guys, this is the key tip. You can't really see it on topographic layers when you're zoomed in at any level of detail. I'm sorry, when you're zoomed out at any kind of level.
Okay, I was going to say.
Once you zoom out, they become blurry, you know, and you can't read the elevations and you can't see the big picture as well. So I love to have my second or third or fourth screen open up to Go Hunt and be looking at those elevation bands and cross-referencing those. So that's one thing is do some experimenting with that elevation band stuff. It's really eye-opening. So that's one.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good, John. It's really good. Number two is I wasn't very excited about the fire layer in Go Hunt because they only go back to 2010. Really ticks me off. I don't know why these people are starting to do this. I think it's just because, you know, places are starting to burn a second and third time. Mm-hmm. And it gets confusing. That's what I'm hearing from like OnX people and stuff. But anyway, I want to see all the fires. But so I use Google Earth, and I use the fire layer that I download as a KML file, because it goes back to the 1980s. Mm. It's an incredible fire layer. It's another tip. If you're going to analyze fires, and that's really what you're focusing in on, get the fire layer we talk about in the course for Google Earth Pro. It's incredible. Because none of them, Go Hunt, Gaia, OnX, none of them go back prior to 2000. So every fire in the 90s is literally not available to you. Gotcha. And that's the last thing you want, is to roll into a 1995 fire zone and not know that you are, because it can be pretty difficult with the timber on the ground, all kinds of issues. Now, hopefully you're going to see that when you get in your aerial photo analysis, but sometimes these older fires are a little hard to see sometimes if they're not huge. So anyway, the fire layer, one of the things I like about the Go Hunt mapping fire layer is that you can pick a particular year of the fire. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that at first. I mean, I noticed it, but I didn't realize the value of it. So let's just say that you're looking at an entirely new area in the whole state of Montana. You've got a general tag. You're kind of open to any location. You're just looking around. Well, if you take my course and you listen to me Bury Me podcast, you know I love to hunt elk in two places, fires and beetle kills. Those are my two favorite places on elk. Mm-hmm. Well, if I'm looking for a 3 to 5 year old fire, I can jump over to Go Hunt map, click those years, and see all the fires just for those years. So I really like that tool that you can turn off all the other fires except for those years. Every other application, it's either all on or all off. Gotcha. So I thought I would mention that, because those are two features I really do like that they're working on. So I think it needs a little improvement in a few areas, and they're working on it, I'm sure. But those two are pretty, pretty valuable. So those are two valuable things with hunt areas, because of the elevation bands. And if you're trying to, you know, just look for particular fires. So anyway, I wanted to throw that in there because we didn't talk about that before. And I thought those are great tips that people can take away from the podcast. Yeah. So elevation bands and hunt areas. Okay, go ahead, John. Sorry.
No. I was going to tell you, you know, you mentioned Arizona. You might not have that problem. But so I've hunted the late archery hunt here three times. And I was lucky enough to tag out twice. One of the first times, I actually spent a ton of time. I was like, you know what? I'm going to tree stand hunt these elk. I'm not going to, because it's one of the units I picked is literally the tallest mountain in the state. And I'll just say it was on the San Francisco Peaks. So it was in unit 7, 7 East. And, you know, at the time, that was still a good unit. Now it's a terrible unit, but, you know, all the elk were up high, and I was running mineral licks. I had cameras everywhere. I had probably 5 or 6 tree stands set up between, you know, water holes. I had this little meadow that's on the side of the mountain that's way secluded up there that I knew the elk, you know, I had glassed them up in there, feeding in there several times at a cameras. Anyway, I had all this intel. Had them all dialed in. I thought this was going to be a slam dunk for me. I was going to go climb in a tree stand and kill a bull elk out of it. And we got pounded in November with snow. And I couldn't even get to them. I had to go back in spring to go get my trail cameras. That's how bad it was. I couldn't get up there with my quads. I couldn't, nothing. And I could see like a mass exodus. You could see all these trails in the snow of elk tracks, big herds of elk coming down in elevation, coming off the 10,000, 11,000 feet and dropping down to the 7,000, 8,000 feet. So it happens. It's just whether or not, you know, you have that topography in the unit that you're hunting. So right. I'm sure it's that way in the blues over here too, but I don't know. I've never hunted over there, but you know, units that have bigger mountains that can actually migrate down. And it's just a quick migration. You know, they're just literally dropping elevation. You know? For them, it's a, you know, 20-minute walk. For us, it'd be like a, you know, 3-hour ordeal. But anyway, so I just want to throw that in there.
Well, it's a fact. I mean, it's just what, if you hunt elk for any amount of time and at all, you're going to run into this. It's going to happen. On September 15th in 2016, I think it was, in Montana, I mean, we got snow, like, we called it Snowmageddon. It was ridiculous. And we couldn't get anywhere. We couldn't get to trailheads. We couldn't get packed in with llamas. I mean, now, it eventually melted off a little before rifle season, but for a solid week in there, it was incredibly, and the elk just got, I don't know that they did something, because we were not running into the tracks. They were bugling like crazy the night before this storm hit. It shut them up. I probably wouldn't have put them into shock. Number two, they just relocated. I'm not saying they dropped. I don't know that they dropped multiple thousands of feet, but they definitely made a change in their normal patterns. And we had another hunt area. We went to it, same thing. But that's where I learned in 2016. I started planning for multiple elevation beds, because, guys, I had four hunt areas worked out. Really, I was excited about the four I had. But unfortunately, all four of them were at the same freaking elevation. Hmm. So I had to drive into Dillon, Montana. I hate to even admit this. I'm supposed to be the East Scouting expert. But I had to drive into Dillon, Montana to get cell service and work out another hunt area. Well, I have a lot of time to hunt elk, guys. I mean, I'm lucky. But if you're going to take a couple of days to get that done, or a day at least, you know, getting in, getting out, you just can't really do it in a day. You're going to waste 2 days doing that, right, at least. And it's just going to be a bummer. And it can be avoided if you follow a couple rules like this. And so having multiple hunt elevations is always one of my first rule when it comes to hunt areas. My second rule, and this one, I mean, a lot of people I found just kind of poo-poo this idea, but I always have at least one that is a base camp, meaning a vehicle camp. I probably am not going to use it. Now, if you're vehicle camping, so be it. But if you are planning on packing in, let's say you're backpacking in, or you're taking stock in, or you're whatever, and most of your hunt areas are worked out for that type of situation, great. But what I'm saying is I almost always have one in my back pocket that is for a vehicle or a base camp of some place that I think I can hike in and out every day from a vehicle. The main reason is, guys, things happen. People get sick, altitude sickness. People get injured. Fellow hunting partners get injured. Mm-hmm. All kinds of things can happen on a hunt. And if you have this option worked out, you can still hunt elk. You're like, your buddy gets hurt. He can't do hardly anything. You're like, okay, let's relocate to my option number four. Set up a base camp there. You can hunt a little from there as much as you can. And I can go and do whatever. At least it's not a hunt ender. But if you don't have that prepared, it can be. I've ran into that in my 30 years a couple of times. We've had injuries. We've had older people. My brother, for example, for some reason, he gets incredible altitude sickness. Hmm. And if we don't work it out right, like we don't acclimate properly for him, he struggles. Now, mostly in Colorado at the extreme elevations. But we have to keep that into consideration. But we had to do this exact scenario. He was so sick that we had to relocate to a vehicle camp so he could, you know, just be more, you know, take care of himself better until he felt better. And after a few days, felt good. So there's a lot of reason to have that. So one, elevation, two, vehicle base camp, I always recommend. The third option for hunt areas, and I don't always do this, guys, is different distances. Okay. I talk about hunt parameters in the course a lot. And what I mean by hunt parameter is, what is your physical capability in a particular hunt area according to your fitness, mental, and your toughness factor? I'm not trying to be degrading here. I'm just saying if you're going to elk hunt on a high level, mm-hmm, you've got to look at yourself in the mirror and be honest. There's nothing wrong with it. You just got to know what you're dealing with. And not only yourself, but whoever is going with you, your dad, your friends, whoever is going, it has to be to the lowest common denominator. I'm sorry, it's just a fact.
Oh, yeah. We do that all the time in, you know,
oh, man.
For clients.
You guide. Yeah, you guide. So you constantly got to do it.
And so, a lot of times you don't even know. So, like, we know we try to do our best to survey and get a good understanding of where our clients are at. But
how many times do they overestimate?
Well, you know, and I don't know if they have the right meter to judge it against, you know, so
right.
Being fair. So, but
so when it comes to hunt areas, if you're in a position where, let's say you're backpacking and let's say you've got a few dudes, mm-hmm. I definitely would do this. Or I don't want to say dudes, let's say a few people. What I mean is you've got a hunt area. Let's say you've got hunt area X and you need to work out a good hunt plan or hunt scenario. Let's say at 3 miles, 4 miles from your base camp, from your vehicle camp. But then let's look a little further. Let's look in the 3 to 6 mile range for some areas as well. Let's say we're feeling good. We're doing great. We might be able to extend a little, but if we can't extend a little, then we've got a bunch of features, a bunch of elk finding features that we've already talked about that are worked out in that closer relativity. So I like to look at hunt parameters sometimes. So for example, I have one hunt area. This is just another example. You can do it however you want. I'm just trying to open your eyes up to things you need to be thinking about. So sometimes I hunt with guys that meet me when I'm hunting. Okay, meaning I'll pack in with my llamas and I'm hunting for a week solo. And then these guys, when they can get off work or whatever the situation is, they'll meet me. And then we'll hunt another week or something. I do that a lot. Mm-hmm. So what I'll do with those guys is I'll go deep first and hunt some areas. And then I'll back up to a spot a few miles closer to the trailhead and hunt a spot while I'm waiting for these guys. And then depending on what I saw, I'll make adjustments.
Right.
But what's important is when you're doing the elk finding features and you're kind of looking at your meadows and your canyons, all the things we talked about, is to make sure you're always within your hunt parameter. Whatever that is, a short parameter, a long parameter, or a combination. There's no sense. I said this before and I'm going to say it again because I see this all the time. I had a guy send me his hunt plan one time just recently. He said, Mark, now, guys, please don't do this because it's I don't want to look at your hunting spots. And it's not that I don't want to. I've had people send me their hunting spots that was one of my spots mm-hmm. or pretty close to one of my spots. And then I was thinking to myself, I mean, when that dude sees me in there, he's going to think that I took his spot. So don't send me waypoints. So he sent me these points. And they're like 9 miles from the trailhead. And I'm emailing him. I'm like, I'm not saying that you're not capable of this. This is like a second year elk hunting or some first or second year. I'm just asking the question here. You do realize that you are off trail for 2 miles and you're 9 miles in. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, do you realize? Now, can you get there? You probably can, but can you get an elk out of there in 70 degrees or 75 degree temperatures? Because he was going like late August. And I'm like, you've got to be realistic. And then he's like, oh, man, yeah, you're right. I'm like, you're talking about solo. And you're talking about 3 to 4 trips minimum for that kind of distance. You're not going to carry 100 pounds. Now, I shouldn't say that. Not many people are going to carry 100 pounds, 9 miles, 3 trips in a row.
I ain't doing it.
I don't know many that can do it. So, you know, I'm not trying to dissuade you. I'm just saying, when you're planning your hunt areas, looking at hunt parameters, this is an important consideration. I actually draw it. I talk about this, but you can draw a radius, a circle. Let's do a 5 mile circle in Google Earth. You can export it and import it into Onyx, import it into Gaia, import it into whatever, base map. And then you've got a circle. That doesn't mean anything. You can do a few points beyond the circle, guys. I'm not saying you got to stay. That's the line of demarcation. I'm just saying it's a great guide. When you're looking, how easy, John, you've been East Guy, and all of a sudden you're looking off and this, you're starting to drift off here and you're like, oh man, look at this great looking slope. And then you realize, holy, that's way too far.
Yep.
So this parameter puts some reality into your hunt planning. It's a really great tool. Now, OnX now has the radius tool. It's incredible. We talked about it, but we're not going to spend too much time. You got to go to the waypoint. It's a great tool. Great tool. So anyway, use those. That's kind of my breakdown for Ontarians.
Cool. I'm going to wrangle us back here and let's start going down the road of the stuff we were originally going to talk about here, because I kind of took us off on that tangent for a little bit, and you're worse than I do. You get into something, you just keep going in every direction.
That's an important part. It really is an important part.
No, it is for sure. Let's talk a little bit about the when, you know, choosing optimal dates. I know you and me are both, well, I don't know if we're both on the same page as to moon. I think you have a little different philosophy than I do, but I do pay attention to the moon phases. I definitely pay attention to weather and temperature, more so than weather, as to where and when. But yeah. I'd like to hear.
Okay.
I know you got a good theory about equinox and full moon and so on and so forth. So.
Well, so Corey Jacobson in Elk 101, his theory on the equinox, he's really close to what I like. Now, there's a few things that I've adjusted over the years than what he talks about, but I really like what he says about it in his course and what he talks about in some of his articles. He does a great job as well. So that's another resource. If you don't believe me or you don't like, you can double. Maybe you can take what I say. You can take what Corey says, you take what John says, and you can marry the three of them, and you're going to be probably right where you need to be. So for me, I'm going to start off with something really simple. The equinox, which is the fall equinox, the shortest light period in the fall, the day with the shortest amount of light, is really important to me. And all the research says the same thing. Mm-hmm. When that time starts to change, it's pretty clear now. The research is pretty darn clear, guys, that it's not moon phases. It's not any other phases. It's not temperature. It's not a lot of things that trigger the rut or the, let's just say this, guys, because with elk, we can't talk about 100%. Let's talk about the majority of cows coming into estrus and entering the breeding cycle is dictated by the date, by this equinox date, which is always within 2 or 3 days every year. Mm-hmm. So this year, we'll talk about this, but it's the 22nd of September is the equinox for 21. So when I talk about the equinox and the moon, here's the way I think about it. When it comes to hunt planning, the equinox always, every time, all the time, trumps the moon phase. But if I have the option, I will work both of those factors into my equation. So what I mean is equinox is a priority. The moon is the second priority. Mm-hmm. So I will move and model my schedule around that. And I thought we might. So the way I like to talk about it is three periods: pre-equinox, equinox, and post-equinox. And now a lot of those overlap. When I plan my hunts, I almost overlap most of these. But my focal point is a little different depending on what period I like to hunt. So I'm getting ready to put this module in my course over the next few months. And I broke it down into pros and cons of each one. The pros of pre-equinox, the cons of pre-equinox, and et cetera. But most people claim that the prime period is 10 days either side of the equinox. I kind of drifting away from that personally. From all my years of being out there, I like to see 7 days prior to the equinox. Now, we're splitting hairs here, guys, but it depends on your area. But in most of the states that I hunt, I like to focus on the 7 days prior to the equinox and the 5 days after the equinox. I don't think the 10 days after the equinox is quite as good as the 10 days prior to the equinox for lots of reasons. But so you always hear people 10 days, 10 days, 10 days, nothing wrong with that. But I like to just dial it a tiny bit tighter. So when I'm planning my hunts, I focus on that 7 day period prior and that 5 day period after, depending on what I can and can't do with scheduling and some other things. Again, we're talking about archery seasons for the most part. And we're talking about hunting the rut for the most part. So when it comes to rifle, and there's some other factors, you know, that go into consideration here, but pre-equinox, okay, I consider that to be the time period leading up to the equinox. So what is the best time in that range is what I'm looking, if I'm going to hunt those periods. Here's a couple pros you want to think about. The elk are potentially less herded up, which means they're potentially more susceptible to calling. Bulls are much more mobile. They're roaming more. They're covering more ground. They're looking for cows more during this period. You might have, your odds of running into them might be a little better because of that movement nature. The bulls have had less encounters with hunters during this period. Even though the hunting pressure is really intense during this pressure, you might find bulls that have had less encounters. So don't misinterpret me. It's not that there's less hunters. They're just the odds of the encounters are a little less because season just started in most states. So the elk are perhaps less remote as well. So if you're base camping from a vehicle and you don't, if your physical fitness is a little less capable, I have found that elk are not quite as remote in the pre-equinox because they have not responded to the pressure. That does not mean that, guys, remember, we're talking in odds multiplied factors here. These are not hard and fast rules. This is right. Just, these are observations. So they also seem to be much more aggressive in this pre-equinox period, meaning bulls to bulls. They're more aggressive with each other, making them more susceptible to calls and manipulation. Now, the cons to this area, this time, this pre-equinox, is they're less vocal many times during this part of the period. They don't just sound off as much as they do maybe when the rut is on. You may not hear as many bulls, but the bulls you do hear are certainly, in my opinion, more callable. The other thing that's that I would consider a con, which is not, but you can work around it, is the bulls will a lot of times come in silent. I've called in so many bulls silent during this time of year, during this leading up period. So I do a lot of cold calling setups during this period. So one of the other cons about the pre-equinox, and this is probably the biggest one, there's, in my opinion, again, this is just me, I feel there's more hunters in the woods during the pre-equinox than at any other period. And the reason I think it's true is they can't wait. Hunters just want it. When the season's open, they're ready to go. And I think a lot of hunters just head out to get opening day, to have the first shot. There's a lot of reasons for that. I'm not saying that's a bad, but I have found I'm dealing with more hunters in the pre-equinox period than in any other period. So those are my, that's my personal analysis on this pre-equinox period. What do you think about that, John, as far as?
Me personally, it's all relative to where I'm hunting. Because some of my rules of thumb of wanting to go earlier than later and so on and so forth, they're all apply to, well, here's the factors that I'm looking at. I'm looking at pressure during a certain time frame. Just like you said, a lot of times that opening week is just disastrous.
Yeah.
It's like a freaking army of people out there, especially on these, you know, over-the-counter things. When it's, listen, when you're drawing a tag and you only have 2 weeks to go hunt, you're going hunting though in the 2 weeks. You don't have a choice, you know? So, right. And then it also depends on, for me, like if I'm hunting in the Southwest, I know temperature has a bigger factor than anything. You know, like it really doesn't matter how hot these bulls are. They're not going to be screaming there in the middle of the day because it's freaking 95 degrees.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. They're just going to go lay down. So those are all the things that I take into consideration. Yeah. And that's why moon has always been a big thing for me. If I'm dealing with here in Arizona, especially if it's hot, which normally is, but there's some units that are up higher elevation that tend to stay a little bit cooler. And sometimes we get a September that cools down or, you know, it's timed well with the rains and whatever. But if it's hot and it's got a full moon, I can almost guarantee you those elk are going to shut up by 9 o'clock every morning, maybe before that. And they're not going to get fired up until way late in the evening, which really screws things up. So when I'm hunting here in the Southwest, like New Mexico too, I put a lot of emphasis whether or not it's going to be a full moon during my hunt. because I know I could count on it going to be hot, because hot and full moon together do not make a good mix. So that's why I don't really, the equinox is not as important to me in those things, because it really don't matter how fired up they are. I start looking at things like, can I glass these elk up? Can I, you know, can I hunt them over water? Can I, you know, intercept them in known travel corridor? Like, I start looking at it a little bit more, I look at it differently, because I know that my calling game is not going to be as effective. Now, mind you, the other thing working for you when you come to hunt in Arizona, New Mexico, places like that, it's a draw tag. There's going to be less people, typically a better, you know, better genetics, a little bit more balanced herd, not as much pressure. So calls work better here as than they do in, let's say, Colorado or whatever. But, you know, they're less call shy.
Yeah.
Although that's kind of starting to go out the door too, a little bit here. But yeah, so I don't know. I always approach every, I don't have any hard, fast rules when it comes to timing. Well, I shouldn't say that. I have a lot of rules, but they all apply. It's not a general rule of thumb. It applies to where I'm hunting and what are the outlying factors with that hunt.
Yeah, I look at it
holistically. I can't do the, you know, oh yeah, I'm gonna go during this state. Like, because I used to do that with whitetail, and that this thing you're talking about with the equinox. I don't know if anybody knows what. I've heard this. If you've listened to me long enough, you heard me say it before, but it's called photoperiodism. It happens in all chervids, or cervids, excuse me. Chervids is Italian. Sometimes I mix up my words. It is the shortening of days, and it triggers something in the pupil of the eye that releases chemical and starts a whole process of going into heat, and it's the cows, or the does, and when we're talking about deer, that dictate the rut. The bucks don't just wake up and go, "Hey, shit, it's, you know, today, time for the rut." It doesn't happen. They start smelling things in the air, things start changing, and boom. Then once they start smelling it, you know, when they're phlegming and doing all that lip curling and all that stuff, that is what makes them change. Biologically change and get them in rut mode. That's when the, you know, neck swell up and testosterone starts going, is when they start smelling estrogen in the air. So
yeah, I, you know, so that's what's been hard about when you start talking about developing a course, is there's so many specifics. I'm glad you said that about Arizona, Mexico, because, well, like New Mexico, I drew a tag last year in New Mexico. Guys, I had no choice. I drew a 5-day muzzleloading tag. You got 5 days, and those are your 5 days. So there's no planning, nothing around this kind of stuff. This only applies when you actually have some choices, like Wyoming, Montana, Colorado, where the seasons are a little longer and the tags are more general. They're DIY, over-the-counter type situations. That's important to remember, and I think that's really key when you're trying to break this down, for me anyway. So pre-equinox and then equinox itself, right around the dates, meaning I think the 7 days before, 7 days after, there's a lot of pros, a lot of cons there. They do become more call shy to me, like you just said, during this period, because people have been in the woods. I do find there's less hunters, though. It's really crazy, is like, during this really prime time, a lot of guys have already been there and gone.
Yep.
There's still people hunting it, don't get me wrong, but they kind of shoot their wad, so to speak, in the first 10 days of the season, and then it starts getting a little better. The post-equinox can be a really incredible time, especially in Montana. I just found it's really a great time because there's definitely a lot less people. And if you're not necessarily looking for a herd bull, Montana has some incredible freaking satellite bulls, guys. I mean, there's some bulls running around that don't have big herds that are most guys would take without question.
Right.
And so those bulls are still susceptible to calling, even maybe even sometimes even more, because it's getting kind of desperate times. There's less pressure. They've had some human encounters, but they're now kind of calming down a little bit by this time. So, you know, we don't want to spend a lot. I want to get into some choices, but if that's okay. But breaking it down to pre-equinox is the days leading up. The equinox period for me is the 7 days prior, 5 days after. And then the post is any time after the equinox and possibly including a few of the days within those 5 days, meaning that you could be, you know, 2 or 3 days after the equinox and further. I have found, particularly in Wyoming and Montana, is that October 1st can be crazy good. And most, I mean, September, end of September, 1st of October can be really good in Montana. And the one thing about it is the bulls are really vocal. So it makes them easier to find. They might be a little hard to call from a herd point, herd standpoint, but they definitely, you can get yourself in position sometimes better, and there's definitely far less hunters. So don't scratch that off the list, you know, just because you think it's a little bit later in the season. There's been a lot of, you know, hunters in the field. But I found things do start to calm down, you know, in that period. So just, that's just my observations. So one of the things I wanted to make sure, you talk about the moon a lot, and I'm, guys, I don't want to make you think that I don't think about the moon, because it is really important, because I agree. The full moon at any time of weather is always a little more difficult to me to hunt. Now, there is some opportunities during the full moon, I think, that a lot of guys miss out on, but it has to be approached, at least I like to approach it a little differently. So this year, the full moon falls on the 20th of September. That's a weird, that's not a weird, but it's a very challenging situation.
Yeah, sucks.
So we've got the full moon. Come on, John. Doesn't necessarily suck. But we've got this full moon situation on the 20th. So I'm balancing that with the equinox. I'm thinking, okay, what do I want to do? And so I'm looking at this for myself. Now I get to hunt most of the season, but I still like to break my hunts up into A, B, and C. Like, what am I like to get my prime hunts or my most important hunts or my A hunts during the time frames that I really, you know, that I really want to do. So before I say that, you want to think about this, guys. I know I've said this and I know I sound like a broken record, but it comes down to odds multiplication. Okay. When we talk about odds, we're not talking about only as they relate to the state that you're hunting, harvest statistics and units. Okay. That's obviously odds multiplied, but it's not all that. It's the elk finding features that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Okay. But it's also wrapped around this breeding cycle. And if you're calling elk, if that's your thing, or that's what you want to do, then it's wrapped around the callability and calling tactics. So there's a lot of odds multipliers at stake here. So, you know, it's kind of, I always say stacking, and it's still the same thing applies. The more you can get aligned, the better chances you got. I know it sounds elementary, but it gets lost in the mix. And so I just wanted to point that out one more time. So here in Montana, we're super lucky. I don't know if we're lucky or not. I don't necessarily agree with this, but I do like it. We have an incredibly long season. I think we have 6 weeks of archery and 5 weeks of rifle or something like that. It's ridiculously long, probably too long. So you got a lot of options here with scheduling your hunt. So like John, I want to also be upfront here and say, no matter what your work schedule, no matter what your wife says you can do, whatever, guys, any days that you can hunt elk is better than days that you can't.
Right.
So before we start talking about prime times, don't sit there and be bummed out. You're like, oh, I got to go this period. Screw that. It's better than not. So for 2021, I'm just going to tell you guys what I'm going to do. So, and then you can adjust, and John will add, he can add his 2 cents. But for Montana, so this year I'm hunting Colorado potentially. I'm hunting Idaho potentially, Wyoming, and Montana. So those are my 4 states this year. Mm-hmm. So how I'm going to work all that out is this A hunt, so to speak, I picked the 10th through the 19th of September. Before we got on the call, I kind of worked through my thing. I want to make sure I could talk about this, you know, legitimately. So here's why I picked it. One, I love this time period. This is really key for me. I love to hunt the days leading up to the equinox, but not getting too close to the equinox. I like to hunt those bulls when they're looking for the cows, mm-hmm. but I also like to hunt them right when they get the cows. Because those herd bulls, in my opinion, when they first start getting cows, they are super aggressive. They can be challenged. They respond to challenges, at least this is my opinion, more at that critical moment when they start getting 4 to 5, 6 cows around them and they start, like, other bulls are moving in and they're trying to figure out the pecking order. I really like those days. So sometimes it's hard to pick those days. Yeah. So I want to pick a period that includes a few of those 7 days leading up to the equinox, but I want a few days before those 7 as well. So that's why I'm picking this 10th to the 19th for one reason. There's a second reason is the new moon falls this year on the 13th. So that's the dark period. Mm-hmm. So that is another reason I'm picking that date, is because it's still the 10th is the darkest. The 10th through about the 15th or 13th, 14th is the darkest period. And the rut's cranking up. It's great opportunity. So I like the new moon on the 13th, and I like that it's setting pre-equinox. And so those two factors have made me focus in on this 10th through the 19th range. You know, if I have a choice, another statement that I'll say is I would rather, and I think Corey Jakes, and I've heard him say this before as well, and I agree with him, I like to hunt the days leading up to a full moon more than I like to hunt the days following a full moon.
I'm with you.
I think, you know, I don't, do you agree with that?
Yeah, because they've already developed whatever pattern they're going to be in.
That's right.
By that time. Right. And they may not have leading up to it yet.
So the 10th through the 19th is my first choice for this year. Now, I'm going to hunt a lot more dates around that, guys. Let's just be honest. But if I had to pick 10 days and I only had 10 days, I think I would take that. There's another factor in Montana. I'm just talking about Montana in general. Is that's about a week after the season opens here. The season, I think, opens on the 5th or the 6th. So that gives hunters a week to kind of burn themselves out, so to speak. And then I also always, guys, too, is now I know you're going to be doing this, but I like to hunt a lot of mid-weekday periods as well. I'll hunt the weekends. I'll hunt anytime. Just be honest. But I also like to make sure I include a solid week of during the week times. There's just a few less people out, especially in Montana with the residents, because we've got such a long season, guys. A lot of residents here are weekend warriors because they can be. They got 6 weekends.
Right.
So they've got the opportunity to hunt the weekends a lot. So they don't have to burn tons of vacation or whatever in order to hunt elk. Now, a lot of guys will take off, don't get me wrong, but you know, you're just kind of lining this all up. So just keep that in mind when you're kind of doing that. And some of this applies to Wyoming as well. But so that's my first choice. My second choice, and when I say this, would be a very close second, would be the 16th through the 25th. Now, that period is going to be more of a battle with the moon. You're going to be in the middle of that phase. You're going to be on the 20th. You're going to be hitting that full moon. But guys, on that second choice hunt, you've got your, what is that? 6 days leading up to the equinox and 3 days following it. You are in prime time for the peak of the rut. Right. Okay, but you are going to battle a little bit of that full moon potentially, but like John said, depending on the weather, guys, in some of these states that are not Arizona, the weather is maybe not. It's going to start cooling down more. Then may not be as
big a deal.
It's not as
big a deal. Yep.
In there during that period, and I will tell you, as you get closer to the equinox, meaning the 22nd, I will almost guarantee you there will be half as many hunters in the field. In some of the states I've been talking about in that time frame. Now, there's still going to be people out there, but it's not going to be like the opening week madness like John mentioned. So I like that 16th to 25th. So the third choice, I'm split. With this moon situation and the equinox, I like 2. I'm just going to real quickly say it. September 6th through the 15th, mm-hmm. because I like to get first crack. A lot of guys like it. I like to go a little deeper with my llamas. I like to get off it, so I feel like the pressure is not going to be a big deal for me. So I do like the 6th to the 15th. I am definitely going to hunt that period. The other one that I like, and I'm beginning to like this more and more the older and more experience I get, is the 19th through the 28th. I am starting to like this post-equinox period more and more because of the nature of these satellite bulls and how aggressive they seem to get when the time is running out. Mm-hmm. And they haven't been able to get things done. And they're kind of throwing reckless abandon sometimes, I've seen. And so I'm going to start playing around a little more in this later period. So anyway, those are my three choices, kind of in line with what the articles that, if you want to read a couple articles that I've written on this, there's two in a row. I wrote a 2018 and a 2019 article in Go On. You can just search Elk Equinox. It comes up first and two on Google, I think. Mm-hmm. And I kind of go through some of the reasoning we've already talked about. But anyway, that's my two cents on that stuff.
Awesome. No, it makes perfect sense. You know, all the stuff that we've talked about in the last three podcasts is all stuff that, you know, you need to consider to have, I think, consistent success. And you know, what I mean by success, especially if you're bow hunting, is creating opportunities, right?
Right.
I will never go home from a hunt that I had opportunities on and say, oh man, that sucked.
Right.
You know, but if you go out there and you get skunked, you know, you don't even hear bugles or don't see elk or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, then you're going to be like, oh man, that sucked. You know, there's only so many times, there's only so many times you can go out and not find animals and feel like it was a successful hunt. You know, I feel like if you've gone and you created some opportunities, even if you never really laid eyes on an elk, but you were, you know, communicating with them, interacting with them, whatever, you know, you can chalk that up as to a win, because that's the main thing is the chase, not necessarily the kill. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Well, John, I think you'll agree with me on this, but you know, we're talking a lot about schedules and hunt dates and the best time to be out there and that's all great. And I think it's important, guys. It's an odds multiplier, no doubt. But I want to reiterate before we wrap up. It is more important. In my mind, there are two things that are more important than your dates. It is those elk finding features that we talked about in part two. If you are picking the spot that have the things that the elk have, the features that the elk want to be around and they want to relate to, your odds are exponentially increased versus a date.
Right.
Now, I think getting in the right place is more important than the right time. So that's number one that I'll say. Number two is, before even the dates again, is the hunt planning. Guys, I didn't used to do this. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, I didn't do this. For my first 10 years, I did not follow these rules or these things that I've laid out in the course and what I've been talking about on all these podcasts. The hunt planning has been a game changer for me. Absolute game changer. Because there's just too much to keep in your memory. There's too many options. There's too many, you can get down too many rabbit holes. There's so many factors at kind of drawing your attention when you're kind of planning a hunt. That proper hunt planning, documentation, notes, setting up hunt areas, all these things we've talked about is vital. So the right elk finding features for me is number one. The plan is number two. And the scheduling and the choices that you make as far as when you're going to hunt is number three.
Yep.
And that's, you know, that's kind of it for me.
I agree with you. Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing the knowledge with us. And you guys out there, if you want to get really geek out on this and really dive into the meat and potatoes, go take his course. And real quick, why don't you, what's the website and all that stuff again? So,
okay. So I just actually, for all you rifle hunters, I just put up a really, I think it's one of my best modules. I mean, just pat myself on the back. I think I spent the most time and research and just really poured everything I had into this late season module. Yeah. It's just, I talk about elk migrations. I talk about elevation bands. I talk about snow analysis. And so, you know, I really, really, really am happy with this module. But you can check the course out at treelineacademy.net. And you can go to, you can also check out my treelinepursuits.com website. Has links to it, has a lot of articles, has references to these Equinox articles. It also has all the podcasts, and I think I'm about 40 now, where we've talked about e-scouting. You know, guys, of course I charge for the course, but if you don't have the money or you can't spend it on the course, don't. Okay? Don't. Go and listen to those podcasts. You listen to those 40 podcasts, you're going to be pretty skilled with what's in the course. I wouldn't say it's everything, but it's a pretty good chunk of it. So, you know, I'm not trying to not take the business, but at the same time, I know the situations. I know people have different. So that's another option for you, is all those things are free. And I've got all, including our first podcast, John, and then I'll have these three as well that we've done, are all available on that list in one spot. So it's easy to find them all.
Nice.
So anyway, I thought I'd mention that too, but thanks for having me on. It's been really great talking to you. You have a lot of the same things I think about. So one of these days I'm coming down to do your javelina hunt. I've always kind of wanted to do it, but I haven't done it yet. And I kind of want to do it just for fun.
It's super fun, man. When we started offering them as a guided hunt, like, I don't know, 9 years ago or something like that, like, I never dreamt. I didn't want to be known for freaking javelina. Who the hell wants to be known for javelina? You know,
but I want to do it. It looks like it's a great way to end the season. It's laid back. It's
right, not exactly. That's what it
fun.
Is.
Fun, and I mean, you know, you're not stomping up and down the mountains. But you are actually.
So that the way we hunt them, we go stomping up and down.
You're gonna work me out on that.
Yeah,
too,
no, I only hunt the mountain pigs, but the. Yeah, we don't chase them in the flats, but yeah, no, it's crazy, man. Because I think it's just like what you said, it's the end of the season, it's an affordable hunt, and nobody else is hunting in February, not hunting really anything else in February, and so it just became super popular for us. I didn't plan on it that way. And like I said, it's not something I wanted to be known for javelina. I would have much.
Okay, well, I'll keep it on the download. But it's okay.
It's been a good hunt for us, and it's a lucrative hunt for us for sure. But,
All right, man.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
All right. Take it easy.
Thank you.
Hey guys, Mark over at Tree Line Pursuits has graciously offered up a 20% discount to all my listeners for his Tree Line Academy. If you don't know what that is, check out the three episodes I did with him. It's an e-scouting program for elk hunting. Has a lot of great information in there. The three episodes, you know, they got good information in there, but it's just highlights of everything that you learn in the course. I'm in the process of doing it now myself, checking it out. Mark and I share a lot of the same philosophies. So use promo code John Stallone, all one word, and you'll save 20% on his Tree Line Academy. Excellent program. Check it out. I think it's a must for those of you getting into elk hunting, or for those of you who want to up your elk hunting skills. Well, that's it for this episode. But before I let you go, I have one more thing to ask of you. I want you to take a serious look at your relationship with hunting and the outdoors and what it really means to you. Now I want you to picture if all that goes away. Not a great picture, right? It's important for us hunters to stick together and have one unified voice. We need to stand for each other, and not just when it affects us or what we do, not when it's just convenient, but really stand up with each other, lock arms. And anytime someone comes to challenge our heritage, we make one unified voice. We are stronger together. Remember that. I promise you that if you stand up with your fellow hunters, even if it's something you don't do, I brought up this in my podcast several times about deer hunters not caring about lion hunters and not caring about, you know, bear hunters and so on and so forth. It doesn't matter. If it's something that you do, if you're not a turkey hunter, you're not a bear hunter, you're not a lion hunter, it doesn't matter. You're a hunter, you're a sportsman, you need to stick together. I promise you, if you do that, we are strong and our voice is loud, and they will not come for what you love. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next one.